Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Slash Filmcast After Dark, the after show for the Slash Filmcast, where we talk about a variety of stuff that didn't happen, that we didn't get to during the regular podcast. Joining us for this episode of the After Dark is myself, Devinder Hardwar, and Jeff Cannata, and also Dan Gvosden from The Amazing Spider Talk. Dan, thanks for sticking with us.
I'm happy to be here. First time in the After Dark. So, you know, it is darker than I thought here.
It's very dark.
I've been bumping into things.
Yeah, but maybe you can join us in thanking the amazing patrons that make this possible, because they're the only ones hearing it.
Well, maybe they can pay for us to turn the lights on, because I don't know what is going on.
It's better in the dark, believe me. Yeah. You don't want to see what's happening.
I guess we have faces for radio, if you will.
Indeed.
Pants are off. We're just chilling.
Yeah. Okay. Did not need that mental image, but
just saying.
All right.
Today on the Slash Filmcast After Dark, we're going to be discussing the Amazon original series Invincible Season 1. We're, of course, going to spoil everything through Season 1, but I think it's safe to say that we all think you should watch the show. So, watch the show, come back, listen to this After Dark. But let's dive into it, gentlemen. I kind of want to start with Devinder Hardwar, because I don't know that I've heard your opinion of the animation.
I like the show.
I think it looks horrible.
But yeah, that's it.
You think it looks horrible, but at the end of the day, you like the show.
I like the show. I think it gets better and better over time. And certainly as we talk about the finale, I think the finale, it was worth getting through some episodes where things felt like they were just kind of wasting time a little, and some episodes where you could tell they were just being really cheap compared to like the overall cheapness of the animation, to that finale, which is fantastic. And we'll get into that. But I think one thing, I've been talking to a lot of people about this, one thing people have brought up is also the fact that this is a show where episodes are running 42 to, you know, to 50 minutes, and animated series typically 24 minutes, you know, like typically really short episodes. So it's basically a one season show, but with the production, you know, the animation production of a very much longer show than we actually got. So all that kind of came into it, and the voice acting and stuff would cost a lot of money too.
Dan Gvosden, I didn't really understand how much of an Invincible fan Dan Gvosden was until recently. Like, Dan, you have like lots of Invincible art all over your house. You have like all the comics for Invincible, right?
Yes, I do. I have one page of art from Invincible, but if it were up to all over your house.
Exactly.
Well,
what I said.
Well, it is an LA apartment, so that may
just
be
like
fair.
Takes up one wall.
Yeah, exactly.
I have to say, by the way, I haven't read the comic, but I've looked at a lot of the art, and it is also striking to me how the comic presentation even seems more dynamic than a lot of the show, which is weird to me. Like the comics are meant to like portray motion and things like that, like while standing still. But I think there's a lot more detail and thought that goes into those scenes than some of what we've gotten here.
I will say there are. So I've started reading the comic, and some of it is very visually arresting.
Yeah.
And I don't think much of the show was visually arresting. I think the show did a very good job bringing some of the elements of the comic to life, right? Like, having seen what was in the comic and then seeing what was in the show, I'm like, ooh, they're very, very well executed. But I don't know that the show was particularly visually arresting, personally. That said, Dan Gvosden, so you're a big fan of Invincible, and I guess I'm curious, like, as a fan of the comic book series, like, how good of a job did you feel this show did in bringing it to life on the small screen?
Yeah, I mean, I think overall it did an excellent job. One of the most faithful adaptations I've ever seen of any comic being translated to whatever screen you want to translate it to. I mean, it is remixed. You know, there are elements that are brought in earlier or moved around. You know, the pivotal scene at the end of episode one was a scene that takes place in issue 7 of the comics. So, you know, I actually think they did a really smart move in moving that forward, and providing a real hook to the series that the comic, I don't think, had straight out of the gate. So I think this is a show with Robert Kirkman kind of looking at his comic, you know, with a 2020 hindsight, like, I don't know. It's like the Funny Games version of it. I don't know.
But wow. Like,
but it is, you know, it's neat to see him kind of like realizing what worked and what didn't. And I can't wait to see that throughout the series as it continues, because the comic is in no way perfect. But that they were able to shift around some of the most key elements of the first iconic 13 issues suggests that they're willing to kind of keep working with that. So I really enjoyed that. I'm with Devendra. I don't love the animation always, though I do think it got a lot better as it went along. Mm-hmm. I don't love the designs. I know they brought Corey Walker back, who was the artist for the first, I think, 30 some issues before artist Ryan Ottley took over on the book. And I've always preferred Ottley's artwork to Walker's artwork. And that's the artwork I own, is Ryan Ottley's stuff. But his designs were always more intricate. I mean, you have to give it to Corey Walker for designing the Invincible costume, which I think is like one of the more iconic new superhero costumes that has been introduced over the years. But I would love to see this show maybe like adapt itself into the more kind of detailed artwork of Ryan Ottley, but I think it would cost a fortune. So I get where they're at, and I'm just happy to have a story told this well.
I wonder if they're going to have more money coming up. They just got renewed for two more seasons.
Yeah, seasons 2 and 3, yeah.
Yeah, so I wonder if that includes a little more budget. Although, maybe they just spent all their money on the incredible top-tier voice talent.
Yeah.
Which
yeah.
could not have been cheap.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
Go ahead,
Dan. I am curious about like this like Invincible feature film that they like announced several years back from like a similar creative team. Like Seth Rogen is kind of involved in it, because he's been like a big champion of the comic for years. And it's like, why would you even want that at this point? Like, I don't know what
that
would be.
Is that still happening? Especially when
they're saying
this?
It's still happening. I have no idea what that would be. Anyway.
So, Jeff Cannata, one of the complaints you had about the voice talent was like, hey, I really am imagining these people's voices, like the actors, not the voices. Mm-hmm. And I agree with that complaint. And it's like, yeah, J.K. Simmons, immensely talented Academy Award winning actor. I don't know why he needs to be the voice talent that's like plays Omni-Man.
He's also done several, like I've pointed this out, several notable animation roles where he is like the fatherly figure, you know, and it is hard to separate.
His performance is phenomenal, as you would expect.
Yes.
Right. But it's J.K. Simmons, right?
But then, okay, so what I was going to say was, then we get to the final episode.
Yeah.
And it's really good.
And I'm like, oh, I get it now. Like, now I understand why J.K. Simmons is in the show.
Angry because, J.K. Simmons. That's because, what you
like,
want.
He
you
is
want
like,
whiplash.
I went from, oh, I could imagine like 8 other actors playing this character to I can't imagine anyone but J.K. Simmons doing this role in the way that he does it.
He knocks it out of the park for sure. Yeah.
The Nolan character literally is doing hand gestures from Whiplash when he's lecturing him. I think is designed after that.
It's an incredible performance. Like the final episode of season one made the J.K. Simmons casting completely worth it to me.
I love the little, the wonderful flourish of Samson. I think it's Samson. No, it's Immortal, whatever his name is. The guy thumbing him in the eyes and reddening his eyes. So his eyes are reddened through that. And such a brilliant idea. Anyway, yes, I totally agree with that.
Yeah.
I totally agree with that.
But Jeff Cannata, I mean, you were pretty taken with the first episode. And let me just say, like, one of the things is, this is one of those things where when I read the comic books, which I have started doing after watching the show, I am so much more impressed with the show. Mm-hmm. Like, because as Dan pointed out, it was at the end of episode issue 7, right? Or issue 8? Which one of those, Dan?
Where, I believe it's 7.
Yeah, it's at the end of issue 7 when Omni-Man murders the Guardians of the Globe in the comic. And it's like, this is a show that they're like, we're going to move that up to the end of the first episode.
You have to. I feel like you have to. I agree with Dan that it's a smart choice, but it's also, I feel like it kind of was the only choice.
But I would argue that like really good storytelling decisions reveal themselves in that way. Like look back and you're like, oh, you had to have done it that way. But it's like, no, I think it's actually really smart. And like,
I just don't think this show, that's the raison d'etre for the show. It has to happen in the pilot, right? It has to happen in episode 1, I think.
You could have easily done a version of the show that was like much more focused on like the coming of age story of Invincible, mm-hmm. and like, and then had that occur chronologically. I'm agreeing with you that it was a really, really good move. I'm not so sure that it was like self-evident that it had to be that way. But
anyway. You're probably right. You're probably right. But I do think it galvanized
yes.
the show.
It's a really great decision. Like, yes. it just yes. is so smart. Yeah. And then what's great about season one is it pays it off. Like, you get to the end, yeah. and it's like there's an answer to the question. They don't postpone it for another season.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I really think,
and
yeah.
I thought in the comic, I do think his logic makes no sense. Omni-Man's logic makes absolutely no sense. Okay, but
so, first of all, I want to hear about that. But first of all, like, overall thoughts on the series, Jeff, after the very promising first episode, like, what did you think of the whole season as a whole?
Well, it's funny, you know, in the same way that your Line of Duty earworm has now infected my brain, Devendra's earworm on this show infected my brain. And I started nitpicking the animation much
true,
more.
But it,
No, you're wrong. Yeah, you're right. Yeah. I agree with you, but I don't think it wasn't bothering me until you mm-hmm. were so vociferous in your yes. objection to it.
I'm going to say same thing, by the way. I agree yeah. with what you said.
I'm sorry, guys, but this is the point of our criticism and analysis. Like, I was looking up Giphies, you know, to describe the show, and some of them are just like still images. There was one of like birds flying by. It was a static shot of birds that they just like Photoshop dragged across Invincible. And I'm like, God damn the show.
No, there's definitely a few moments that I've noticed that are they're really, really egregious, but. And overall, yeah, it's not great, but I think the fight choreography is great. The way the violence is brought to life and the sort of visceral nature of it is really satisfying to watch, you know,
the scale of the conflict, I think is fantastic.
The storyboarding yes. too. Yeah. Like, mm-hmm. I mean, this thing doesn't sit still, you know, like it is, you know, scene, and, you know, unique angle, new thing happening. Like, I think, you know, the team that kind of put together the storyboarding or framing, if you will, of it, like, I think this is an animation show that just, like, even if the animation is lacking, it moves. Like, you know, it's not mm-hmm. lingering on one image for long.
Well, the thing that it does so smartly, and I think this has a lot to do with Robert Kirkman, frankly, is it tells its story through action. And that is a thing that the best action movies do well, but fewer and fewer. Oftentimes you'll have a story and then you'll have an action set piece, and then you'll go back to telling the story and then you'll have an action set piece. Mm-hmm. But the best action movies, or TV shows in this case, actually tell the story through the action. The action itself moves the plot forward. And what this show does again and again and again is that. And it's actually impressive to see how every single episode has a big action moment. And you get, I mean, very comic booky action. This is like people pummeling each other. This is fisticuffs, the classic superhero, you know, back to the 40s type, you know, thwap and punches of bad guys and good guys and bad guys. And all very, I think, very satisfying to watch, and never, to my mind, never gets overly repetitive or redundant. It's always fun. It's always interesting. They always put the hero, Invincible, through a lot of punishment, right? He's not,
yeah.
he never escapes any fight unscathed, even minor ones. He's getting, you know, the snot kicked out of him. And it's all, I think it's all very fun and satisfying to watch. And it also never feels like we're taking a break from the story to give you an action set piece. It's all integrated really, really well.
And I like yeah. that it never has to like delve into too much exposition, because it's using the shorthand of all these heroes and villains we already know.
Yeah.
You know, like, there's a Dr. Octopus equivalent of a guy with like rubber bands that come out of his chest, you know,
yeah.
like they're weird alternate versions, but we don't have to spend the time, you know, that we would setting it up. I mean, I feel like the same with like Into the Spider-Verse, where it's like, you know, Spider-Man, like, we'll come up with a shorthand and yada yada through mm-hmm. it. And I'm eager to get to this place in superhero content where it's like, yeah, you know, superheroes, let's just go, you know?
Yeah.
We got a Batman movie coming up. Give me a Batman movie with 12 villains. I know all his villains. Don't give me their origin stories.
Right.
I mean, I've spent so many minutes of my life watching Bruce Wayne's parents killed.
I experienced it in 4DX. You know, I felt those bullets.
I've probably spent over an hour at this point of my life watching the Waynes die. And it's like, I don't need to see that again.
Dave, did you realize that they came out of an opera into an alley?
I didn't. And then pearls.
This is what a Batman experiences every day, though. It's this PTSD. You know, this is what drove him to become Batman. Now we all understand.
You don't want to understand the Batman, then.
Yeah.
So let me say a couple of quick things about this show. One of them is that I think one of the things that's remarkable about the show is how ultra-violent it is. And I have now read the first 8 issues or whatever of Invincible, and it does not need to be as violent as it is in the show.
This is how I feel about a lot of Kirkman stuff, but yeah.
I'm like, reading the comic, I'm like expecting, oh, this is going to be super violent. And then it's like, wow, the comic book I find to be much tamer than the show. Dan Gavazin, do you have an opinion on this?
Just wait, David. The comic gets incredibly violent. I would say like way more than you've even dared seen in the show.
Oh, wow. Okay. But I think that one of the things that the show illustrates is just how fragile humanity is. This show gave me a ton of sympathy for Ben Affleck's Batman in Batman v Superman, which is, he's like, if there's even a 1% chance that this guy could turn evil, we have to treat it as an absolute certainty. And in Invincible, the series, you see exactly how much damage someone like that could actually do. Which is,
yeah, and this, like, dude has like a third of Superman's powers.
Yeah, and he could literally in like probably 20 minutes destroy planet Earth if he wanted to, right?
Yeah.
And that is just really shocking to see portrayed. It actually reminded me of Game of Thrones in a lot of ways, because like Game of Thrones, you think like, oh yes, these common narratives of good and evil and good triumphing, and it's like, nope, we actually live in a cruel, heartless world that doesn't give a shit about these narratives, and that presses on despite, like, without any understanding of good or evil. And that's kind of the world that these characters live in as well. And that is quite refreshing. Basically, what shows like The Boys are saying is, if a Superman were to ever appear, you should actually be afraid. You shouldn't be like excited about that. And I am 100% behind that message. So
yeah, because we are all ants.
We are all ants in the cosmic cosmic scheme of things. I actually think like the show, in my opinion, feels like a little bit mean spirited in that regard. And maybe it's
a little bit.
Everyone's gonna say like, yes, that's what it's supposed to be. But I'm just like, look, like I like it. It feels like over the top, almost for its own. Like you don't need to have the mother's arm getting ripped out of the socket and the subway full of people in the same episode. In my opinion,
the
like
subway
and the
full
children
of
dying.
Yeah.
Subway Jeff, full of people is,
talk about
is
that. What do you think of it?
Just an incredible.
Yeah.
Just the mind that comes up with that.
Yep.
It's
fucked
up. I had to stop reading Walking Dead because shit got just messed up. This is the way this guy thinks.
Are you impressed or are you horrified?
In the comic.
Yeah.
Are you impressed or are you horrified, Jeff? Or both.
Both. No, I think it's an incredibly brilliant idea, right? What a horrifying and appropriate thing for him to do. It, you know, forcing the boy to be both the cause and witness of something that horrible.
Yeah.
And never seen anything. I mean, before it was in the comic, never thought of that, you know. it's quite an amazing thing.
So upsetting. It's just upsetting. I'm upset by it. I'm like Miles Teller in Whiplash screaming, I'm upset. You know that scene with,
it is if you think of the incredible Spider-Man 2 train rescue sequence,
it's
like the opposite,
and he's like, well, the exact opposite, let's kill everybody on this.
How do we do the exact opposite of that scene?
I will say that, like, as you know, mean-spirited as it is, I don't think that the tone of the show, and this is not like a spoiler or anything, but I don't think it really lingers in the like atmosphere of The Boys for as long as The Boys does. Like, I don't think it is a show without hope or without like a sense of optimism. You know, even in like his final line to his father, where he says, "You know, I'd still have you, Dad." There is this kind of optimism and love of family that is at the core here, and will be, you know, we see it expressed through his love of his mother in scenes following this. So, you know, I really like The Boys a lot, but I think that show is, it like enjoys being so,
misanthropic.
Yeah. And I don't think that that's Invincible entirely. Because I don't think I would love a comic that lingered in that space for that long.
I mean, here's like, having just finished The Boys season two, I think the season one is certainly guilty of that, but season two just seems more thoughtful. This is a show where like scores of civilians just die all the time. I'm talking about Invincible right now.
Okay.
It's a show where tons of people just die.
Yeah.
And that's it. Like, and there, I think it's the second episode where it's just like the wave of enemies, people like hitting New York City, I think, like just over and over again. Where just like the sheer scale of the human violence just made me a little desensitized to what's happening. Like, to me, that just seemed like, why would anybody live anywhere near civilization or a city that is getting hit with superheroes? Like, we've talked about this before with other superhero properties, but this one is certainly like the collateral damage is so high in the show compared to most others. To me, that seems super cynical.
Yeah, I think you're saying like the collateral damage is so high that it would reorient society. Like you would see that, hey, this collateral damage is possible on a somewhat regular basis. Let's move out into the desert into like
a Chernobyl event, you know, and we don't live in Chernobyl.
Chernobyl event, like on a weekly basis, basically, right? Like according to the things that happened to the show. Yeah, that's interesting. Reminds me of our conversation about Shin Godzilla on the After Dark a few weeks ago. But anyway, so it sounds like, Jeff, you were still a fan of the show. Dan, obviously a fan of the show. I'm a fan of the show. I think it's really rich in terms of its ideas. You know, the main journey Invincible goes on. I let me just say one of the other issues I kind of had with the show actually is one thing I like is that it's in some ways about what it's like to balance being a kid with being a superhero, right? And
classic Spider-Man stuff.
Yeah, classic Spider-Man. I thought that stuff was pretty strong, actually. I will say that the way that Invincible is designed, like the character and his... He looks older than I think he is, which makes him acting like a high school student feel incongruous at times. You know, because he's like, I don't want to go home. You know, I don't want to talk to my mom and dad. You know, like, and it's just like, dude, like, grow up, man. You know, that's kind of how I felt, because even though he's in high school, like he just looks like he should be older than, you know what I mean? Like he looks like a legit superhero, you know? And so that was a little bit weird for me. I don't know if anyone else had that reaction that he kind of,
I just think it's unfortunate. In the comic, I never got the sense that having the, eye goggles or whatever you want to call them, was a detriment. It always felt like it's such a cool design, but in the animated series, I felt like it was really a loss not to see his eyes in a lot of those scenes. So in that sense, I felt it was a bit of a bummer. But
yeah. Any other thoughts on season one of Invincible? You guys like psyched for season two, or were there any other subplots of season one, I guess, that you were particularly a fan of? I thought the robot stuff was kind of interesting. I'm like, that's kind of an interesting. Kind of curious where they're going with that, you know.
I love the clone twins. Like, I'm glad we get a lot of them. And yeah, Robot, whatever he's up to is kind of interesting. Yeah,
I wish that they had held back on that, but for reasons that I can't really get into without spoiling anything. It just they moved that plot line way forward, and I think there's reasons that might be like a detriment ultimately. But I'm really excited for the future, because I think, like The Walking Dead, the appeal of Invincible is like taking this world seriously and just making sure everything has consequences that continue forward. And, you know, The Walking Dead is just like, hey, zombies, but for 10 seasons of it. And these things have repercussions. And this is the same with superheroes. You know, no subplot can be forgotten. Mm-hmm. And I think it will only compound on itself to make it more interesting as we move forward.
My question for you guys, by the way, is it worth diving into the comics right now? Because it's also going to kind of spoil, I guess, whatever's going to be happening in the next few seasons too. Is it good enough to do both?
I'm planning on reading the comics up to season one end. And then and then kind of like watch season two and then read the comic for season two. But I'm enjoying it so far personally. And as I mentioned, like some of the art is really very impressive. I'm actually kind of impressed by a lot of the stuff they cut out of season one, right? Like there's just like a lot of subplots in these first comics. Like there's a guy who's turning high school students into suicide bombers, basically, right? And I think they very wisely cut that entire subplot out of the show, if I recall correctly. I don't think that was that in the show, Dan? Yeah.
No, it was cut out.
Yeah, it made me so impressed because I'm like, wow, they really picked their battles of like what was the right, like what to include in the show. And I overall, they had more hits than misses. And I was quite impressed with that.
Have you gotten to the like comics commentary? There's like a famous page in that, those early issues where he goes to like a comic convention to meet like a Robert Kirkman equivalent. There's a page where he's like, you know, hey, you know, how do you manage to churn out so many books so quickly? And the comic creator's like, well, you know, sometimes we just reuse the same panels over and over again for dramatic purposes. And the whole page is like the same panel repeated over and over again.
No, I haven't gotten there.
Yeah. So much of the Invincible comic is a critique or satire of superhero comics. And that's really not in the show very prominently. Mm. But I'm curious to see as that there's certain arcs in the Invincible comic that lean more into that than others, and I could see them kind of like backing off from that in a show that's as serious as it kind of is presenting itself so far.
Interesting. But yeah, Devendra, I plan to read it, and Dan, it sounds like you'd recommend it, right? Like this is a worthwhile thing to read.
If you read issues 1 through 13, whether you get it in the trade paperbacks or the omnibuses, that's exactly what they cover in this first season and nothing more. Mm-hmm. So you'd be pretty safe. That's like the first two trades. And
I'm wondering if it's worth it. Like, that's the thing. But it sounds like it is.
Comic is great.
Okay. So, yeah, it's pretty good. I'm enjoying it. And so this is Invincible Compendium 1, which has issues 0 to 47. And if you read issues 1 through 13 in that, that gets you through first season. Which is, by the way, I'm like, there's three compendiums. So like, wow, they theoretically
welcome
have
to comics
for literally 10 seasons of the show if they want.
And I would say, Devendra, for you particularly, if you're not loving the animation in the show, like this thing is, I mean, I'm experiencing this secondhand, but like maybe you'll get more out of the artistry of the comic.
Yeah.
And
I think I will. Yeah, yeah. At this point. Yeah.
So I certainly don't feel like anything is lost, as I'm approaching the show, because things are different enough that I can still have some narrative surprises and just enjoy the adaptation element of it.
Nice.
All right, folks. Those are some thoughts on Invincible Season 1 streaming right now on Prime Video. I think that's going to take us to the end of this week's episode of The After Dark. Dan Gavastin, thanks so much for sticking around with us. Really appreciate it.
This was fun. Thanks for having me.
Check out Dan's podcast, The Amazing Spider Talk, at AmazingSpiderTalk.com. Actually, it's just Amazing Spider Talk, right?
Well, it's both right now, but yes, AmazingSpiderTalk.com.
This is a true story, guys. I made this YouTube show with Dan Gavastin about Falcon Winter Soldier. And at the end of the first YouTube episode, I said, find his work at TheAmazingSpiderTalk.com. And he told me, Dave, it's not TheAmazingSpiderTalk.com. It's just AmazingSpiderTalk.com. And so I actually bought the URL, TheAmazingSpiderTalk.com, and it now forwards to his actual AmazingSpiderTalk.com. So,
which is way too far, but I appreciate it, David. So
I'm a stickler for no inaccuracies in the show, whether it's about the end of Line of Duty or your podcast.
I'm a stickler for retroactive no mistakes. I mean,
well, he keeps making it, so it's actually been quite helpful, but... the traffic is just pouring in. So,
yes, indeed. Yeah. All right.
And that is a wonderful way to distinctly measure how many people heard about it from him.
indeed. All right. Check it out at TheAmazingSpiderTalk.com or AmazingSpiderTalk.com. Either way works. And next week on the Slash Filmcast, we'll be reviewing Stowaway. That should be a lot of fun. All right. See you later. Thanks for listening.
Thank you.